Good afternoon, everybody. Woo! It is April 14th, 6:57 p.m. And we hope everybody is doing great. Carlisle, how are you feeling today, my friend?
Doing well.
Feeling good?
Feeling great. We got another interview.
We do have another interview today. Mr. Blake, the Blake Bedingfield, former NFL insider, but, you know, recruiter. We'll give him the proper, you know, the proper
introduction.
Exactly. And he's going to get that once we have him on. But like I said, we hope everybody's staying happy, healthy out there. Times are tough right now. Shit's weird. We get that. A lot of weird sports stuff. A lot of weird things going on in this COVID sports world, non-sports world that we live in. You got virtual games, virtual iRacing. As a matter of fact, Kyle Larson was going to be here today, but he had a clan meeting to go to.
Yeah, he couldn't make it. Yep. Apparently, he ordered like 40 crosses on Amazon and some lighter fluid.
Really capitalized on the gas prices right now. Got a lot of that.
And not for filling up his NASCAR.
Yeah, so it's really, I don't know, I guess the context, the whole thing's weird. Long story short, he was having an iRace event. And he didn't know if anybody could hear him. He was asking questions, and he said a racial slur, the N-word. You know, one of probably the granddaddy of all racial slurs.
Let's
the one that'll derail your career. No, it'll derail your career faster than anything else in the world.
Absolutely. But all joking aside, it wasn't ER, okay? So, which doesn't make a difference, but he wasn't racist. I'll put it that way.
But
nonetheless, the context of it,
apparently today, there was no racist intent at all, but like I said, everybody's bored. They don't know what to do. He got fired from his team, Chip Ganassi Racing. You know, pretty much ruined his career, but has a head start at ruining his career. So that shit's been going on. You got Dak and Zeke
throwing parties,
really weird
coronavirus
stuff.
Parties.
As a matter of fact, speaking of the NFL, here we go. Music off.
It's off.
This is the Dome. Hello? Hey, is this Blake?
Yes.
Hey, Blake, how are you doing? So, everybody, we want to take a minute to welcome on Blake Bedingfield. He's a former NFL director of college scouting and a contributing writer for Paul Kowarski, and he also is a weekly guest on 104.5 The Zone. So, Blake, we really want to appreciate you for coming on, man. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Happy to be on.
Hey, man, how's it going?
Doing great.
Good. Hey, man, this is Austin Carlisle, man.
So Blake, man, we really just wanted to take a minute with the draft coming up and really no sports going on at all to ask you questions, see how you've been feeling about everything. So first things first, Blake, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Worked in the NFL for about 19 years. In the last 2 years, spent the last year in the XFL with the Houston Roughnecks. And
got to talk to you about that.
In the Alliance of American Football with the Memphis Express. And so spent roughly the last 21 years in professional football. And there's really nothing like it than evaluating players and building teams and putting them together and see how they all come out in the end.
Yeah, so we're actually from Memphis originally. And I'm a Dallas Renegades fan, man. So got a little bit of a bone to pick with you, but that's all right.
Well, we put it on Dallas earlier in the year and didn't get to play them that second time, but 5-0 team with the Houston Roughnecks. So we were looking forward to playing them again.
Man, that was honestly one of the coolest things that I'd seen in a while. And that's a question that I got to ask you. So how detrimental do you think it is that's not a thing now? Because you saw the players after the XFL was kind of discontinued as of right now. You saw how many players got looked at and even went to an NFL team, got picked up. So do you think a league like that is necessary? I feel like it is, because I feel like not only is it going to help players, but it can help the NFL get better, and it can help whatever brand that is.
Yeah, there's definitely a need for another football league, not only from the standpoint of just TV viewing and people wanting to watch more sports and football, especially in a downtime when you're talking about the January, February, March before the draft and basketball kicks in with March Madness and baseball starts up in April. You know, it's it's needed. It's something that I think there's enough NFL players or NFL caliber players where there's another league for development purposes, and really that's what it needs to be. There's no competition to the NFL. There doesn't need to be that, but there needs to be a minor league system, a AAA, so to speak, and really help players develop and move back to the NFL after maybe a training camp tryout the year before.
And I couldn't agree more with you. Carlisle, you have a question to feed off of that?
Yeah, man. This is kind of a scout question for you. Just really, what got you into scouting? And I was reading about that you switched from criminal justice pursuing DEA to go to, you know, football and scouting. What really made you, you know, turn to football?
You know, I did. I always loved the scouting aspect. I always loved the player personnel. Going back into when I was a teenager, I played in high school and knew at that point, I was good enough scout back in high school to know that, you know, my senior year was going to be my last year playing football. But, you know, I always loved that side of it. I didn't want to coach, but I wanted to be in personnel. I loved the thought of team building, building a team, constructing, you know, an organization, a team. Also enjoyed the scouting aspect of it. Had notebooks going back from the time I was 13 on. And anyway, going through college at the University of Alabama, I was in criminal justice. was moving on to the DEA at that time. And at that time, I was moving on to the DEA and decided to make that switch to football. And wanted to make the switch to football, and had a scout or a director of scouting with the Houston Oilers at that time, Glenn Cummey, that took an interest in me, and he showed the interest in me, and I was hired as a young scout with the the Tennessee Oilers when they first started here in Nashville.
Yeah, that's badass, man. So it kind of just fell in your lap, or I guess it was a perfect like opportunity meets preparedness kind of thing.
You know, it was, and you know, I really worked probably after college a good 4 years before it came to fruition, and you know, spent a lot of my time and a lot of my money and putting that effort and time into it, paying my own way to the Senior Bowl, Blue Gray game back then, which was an All-Star game in December, and you know, paid my way, paid my dues to get an opportunity, and when the Houston Oilers and then the Tennessee Oilers came calling, I was ready. I was young at that time and really put in a lot of grunt work, which a lot of people do early in their career, and was able to do a lot in a short amount of time with an organization that had a lot of veteran scouts. I think the next youngest scout to me at that time, I was 27. The next youngest scout was 52, and that was the director. So
really?
There was a need for youth in the scouting department, and I was happy to learn from all the older and more experienced guys.
To oblige them. So you said you got picked up with the Oilers. What do you have any crazy Jeff Fisher stories for us or one?
You know, I don't know about crazy. You know, he was always really good to deal with me.
I feel like he's just an eccentric guy, like a good guy to be around, just kind of out there character.
You know, he's a very laid back person, very laid back.
And I love that.
Competitive, obviously, on the field and when it comes to football. But you know, he always did things that kind of took the players by surprise. I remember one time he parachuted in off a helicopter and had to land right on the football field right before practice. And another time he was regular season,
just like before a game?
This was during the regular season, just during one of the weeks. And
what did risk management have to say about that? Was there any?
You know, I think the president, who was also our team lawyer, was none too excited about something like that.
That is hilarious.
He always had different ways of kind of loosening up the team, so to speak. And, you know, whether it was, you know, he would have a Black Hawk helicopter from Clarksville land on the field and, you know, just have just different things like that that kind of broke up the monotony of whether it was training camp or during the season.
Just keeping it fresh. That's why I like him, because he seems definitely like a player's coach. Seems down to earth. And he kind of seems like he just doesn't give a fuck at all. Like he's going to have his – this is how he's going to do it. And, you know, if you don't like that, then you really don't need to be a part of it. And I think when we watched the – did you get a chance to watch the Hard Knocks when he was at the Rams and all of that?
You know, I did, yeah.
And did that – like to you, did it encompass him as a coach, like what you saw all those years? Or did you feel like it was kind of a little biased?
You know, I think that was him. I think he was definitely a player's coach, but, you know, he came from that Mike Ditka, Buddy Ryan school of coaching, and, you know, had that old school toughness still with
that
him.
That grit, that fire.
Yeah, had a lot of veteran coaches on his staff that also brought that same mentality. And, you know, he just – but he was a player's coach, and he kind of dealt with all of them in a different way is one of his lines. He said, everybody has the same rules, but I implement them differently to each player. And then it was interesting because usually the best players were had the rules a little bit easy.
Okay, so there was some favoritism that goes on in the locker room a little bit, you'd say, without saying it.
You got a guy that can play quarterback or play running back and win ball games for you, you're going to treat him a little bit differently than the guy who maybe doesn't dress on game day.
I can understand that completely. Did you ever get it? Well, I'm sure you did. How was Frank Wycheck as a person growing up as a kid? This is just a personal question, really. Completely selfish question. But was he a pretty good guy in the locker room?
You know, Frank was an outstanding guy. You know, still friends with, you know, Frank. Even after he left and left football, he just is a down-to-earth guy, great person to deal with, you know, really hard worker on the field, very conscientious about his game, but yeah. Just a really laid-back, easygoing guy, you know, could relate to almost anyone, and I think that's kind of the personality Frank's always had, and that's why he was good on the radio and good when he did the play-by-play, and, you know, he could really relate to the fans and people, and if you saw him out, I'm sure Frank was always willing to sit down and talk. He always liked to talk and talk about the game and talk about football.
Hell yeah. You love hearing that about players that you like seeing on the field, you know, hearing good things about them off the field. Carlisle, did you have another question?
Yeah, man. Scouting-wise, I know you did some work for the Arena Football League. I was interested to kind of know what teams you worked for and how that was. And is your approach different for each league as far as XFL, NFL, and Arena Football League on how you look at players?
Yeah, no question about it. The Arena Football League was something I did before I came home with the Titans. And, you know, it was the league was the type where we would go all over the country, and I kind of dealt with the South. I worked with the Albany Firebirds out of New York and just held football camps for them. I'd have a camp in Nashville one day and Birmingham, Alabama the next, Montgomery, and then Atlanta, then Charlotte. And we were always trying to find players. Players, they didn't get paid a lot back then. A lot of their salary was – it was a small salary to play the game, but then they were housed. They were housed for free and fed for free, and then given jobs by the companies, the sponsors of those teams in the off season, kind of supplement their finances. So yeah, and that was totally different than what we did in the XFL. The XFL was something where, you know, it was interesting to be able to and exciting to be able to pick a team from scratch, be able to draft the team from player one to 52. And be able to draft every player within positions and side of the ball, and be able to pick players that have had, whether it's NFL experience or players, some of them were right out of college that didn't get a chance in a NFL camp, and you know, you evaluate those players on film, and instead of the trial format, it was more of evaluation on film. We did have a few trials, a few camps where players showed up, but for the most part, it was based on what they did in college or other professional leagues.
Okay, and when you say you're looking for guys, is that word of mouth, or is these guys that you kind of gotten the pipeline, like you said, are undrafted, or maybe guys that have just kind of been, you know, pushed to the wayside? How do you sift through those guys? Because I know there's a lot of them.
You know, there were probably a few thousand players that kind of put their name in a pool that wanted to be in the XFL. And, you know, you had a player like P.J. Walker, our quarterback. He had played with the Indianapolis Colts for 3 years, was a backup to Andrew Luck. And, you know, so we had some film on him. It was preseason film, very rarely played in an NFL game, but had some preseason film on him. Knew that he had the skill set that, you know, could really translate to June Jones, who was our head coach on offense. Yeah. And, you know, so it was one of those that you pick players for the offense that we were going to run and the system we were going to run, but try to find the best players out there. Guys, not only that have ability to get back to the league, like a PJ who signed with the Carolina Panthers, but, you know, players that maybe were overlooked in a training camp. Maybe they didn't get drafted. They were injured coming out of their senior season in college and needed that opportunity to put some good film on and get a chance to go back to the league. We had a couple of those players as well. And, you know, I had a lot of contacts in the NFL, so I called some teams and found out who some of their last cuts were and looked at those players to see if they could make our roster, and a lot of them did.
So we know what you're looking for in a player, but are there some things that you're not looking for, like some red flags, like, you know, what you always hear, you know, a Saturday night senior season drunken arrest,
like, or a first date,
or like, you know, that left knee that's been nagging that guy. Like, are these injuries, are these things that are we just as fans like, oh, he's going to drop his draft stock, or is this, are these real things you guys look for?
You know, when you're talking about the NFL, it definitely matters. And what I mean by that is you hope the player that you sign, draft, is going to be with you for more than a couple of years. Yep. And you hope that they'll be part of the not only the organization but the community. You know, when you're looking at the XFL or the Alliance of American Football, or even on a lower level, the Arena Football League, you're looking at players that can play right now. They may not be with you in 2 months from now. So, you know, those off-the-field issues are a little bit lessened. But in the NFL, that's a big deal and something that you definitely pay attention to, and that's part of the scouting job. I think, you know, as scouts, you're evaluators of the player, mm-hmm. but you're also part of private eye. I've always said you've got to find the background on them. You've got to be able to go to the school and have contacts where they can tell you everything the player did in college and off the field. And you know, we have our, in the NFL, you have your own kind of police records that you can dig into and get background information on campuses or throughout their hometown.
Right, yeah. Roger's got those secret files that you can access. That kind of feeds into a question that I had. When you are looking at those players, so how much is the scout held accountable? I heard this year a lot of people obviously are high on Jordan Love. Another question I had to talk to you about. 17 turnovers this year. Didn't do as well as he did the year before. QBR is still pretty good. But, I mean, when you have a recruit or a scout that says, I would never draft this guy, and then you have allegedly all these other teams who are so high on them, what does it say about that scout, and how bad does that help or hurt that scout, depending on the situation?
You know, I think as a scout, you have to be able to stand on the table for a player one way or the other. Either I like this player and he fits what we want to do, and here's the reasons why, or I don't want this player a part of this organization, and here's the reason why. And usually those, I don't want the player a part of something, usually has to do with more character, mm-hmm. or bad teammate, bad locker room,
right.
Influences that you don't need at the time. Sometimes if you have a strong locker room and you have a strong veteran leadership, then you can maybe withstand one or two of those players. But you, if you bring in too many, that's the way your team's going to move in that direction. So, you know, I think as a scout, you want to stand on the table. You want a scout that's going to have his opinion and really stand on the table for a player or, you know, put his balls out there. That's what you have to do.
Right.
I mean, that's part of the business. That's part of the exciting part of it is being able to say, you know, I want this guy, and if he doesn't work, then hold me accountable.
Yeah, you got to vouch for him. And that gives you a special bond with that player throughout life, right? I mean, that's a guy that you can pick up the phone and be like, hey, man, you know, if, I guess, given the situation or the personality, but, I mean, am I wrong? I mean, that your job, you get close with these guys on a personal level, right?
You know you do, and you know, you try to separate it a little bit from
right.
the professional side.
Try not to shit where you eat, but...
Yeah, in their rookie year, you're bringing them in, and 4 years later, you may be cutting them. And, you know, so you gotta be able to separate that personal a little bit, mm-hmm. but you also can step up and say, hey, look, I didn't bring you in here to act like a jack.
Right.
You know, you got to get it together and move on, or you're going to be cut. And I'm just going to let you know right now, you know, you're not going to be here long if you continue to, you know, act this way or not put in the work that's required. So there's no question about it. You kind of build a relationship. You build a rapport with these people, and they respect you too because they know you brought them in.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a mutual thing. What'd you have to say,
man? I'm kind of interested to know what a day in the life of a scout's like. You know, I would kind of imagine it's a lot like a head coach. You know, you're traveling a lot, going to schools. You know, building a relationship with coaches and players. So just kind of interested.
Sure. Scouts like Groundhog Day. You know, you go on a Monday and you go to a school like Alabama, and use that as an example. You get there at about 7 o'clock in the morning when the coaches get there, and you'll spend till about 5 p.m., 5:30, whenever they kick you out of practice, all day at one school. So you're going to sit there and you're going to talk to coaches, assistants, coordinators. You're going to talk to trainers, strength coaches, equipment guys. You know, whoever that you need to talk to, academic counselors. You're going to watch film of the player, and you're also going to watch practice at the end of the day, and then you're going to get in the car and you're going to drive 3 or 4 hours to Auburn, and you're going to do the same thing the very next day, and you're going to spend about 130 days on the road as a scout. That's what you do. Every night when you get to that hotel, you're typing up your reports and you're sending them in, because what happens is the director of scouting wants to see what you gave him, because he's going to base his schedule based on the grades that you gave a player in a particular school. So
that's interesting.
You constantly have to stay up on it, because if you're in an Alabama or an LSU or you know, whoever in the SEC, you know, you're writing up 12, 15 players. You get to go to an Appalachian State, maybe you're only writing 4 and 5. And so it's kind of a little bit of a relaxed day, but you still have a lot of work. But you have to move on to the next team. So when you go to Auburn and you're going to write up 12, 15 guys there, you've got to flip your mind and get ready for the next school.
Wow. Hell yeah. That's awesome. So, and to be honest with you, I mean, that's one of those things where, like, if you're going to have a Groundhog Day doing anything, that's pretty good setup. Pretty nice.
You know, it's not bad. You're watching football for a living. You're getting to be around, you know, college campuses, that type of thing. It's not a bad lifestyle.
You're an insider. You got the news.
The older you get, those drives get a little bit longer, and you're away from your family for a number of times. So if you have kids and a wife and that type of thing, it starts to wear on people. I think you see today, you see a lot of younger scouts on the road and without families, and then not as many middle-aged guys.
Right, yeah. I guess they're just kind of capitalizing on that while they can. So you actually brought up something earlier when you said that you're scouting and finding these players. One of my favorite guys, and I think one of the sneakiest NFL talent guys from the XFL, is Dietrich Nichols, somebody that you might have had a hand in and, you know, picking out. And I'm also a Saints fan, so biased in that area. But I wanted to know your thoughts on him, man. I mean, he led the XFL in interceptions. How did you find that guy? Out of South Florida, undrafted, played with the Cardinals for, I believe, like 5-6 games maybe. How did y'all pick that guy up?
You know, we found him on film, and, you know, when we start to look at a Dietrich Nichols, he was a player that we first thought would be a nickel corner for us, and so we brought him in as going to be a nickel corner, and thought that would be his role when he transitioned back to the NFL, and we had a couple of injuries to safety. Trey Elston, who played at Ole Miss, also the New Orleans Saints, was injured in training camp. He was going to be our starting safety, and was injured, had a knee injury, and so we moved Dietrich back to that safety position, and he really took off. And once we had a couple of guys get healthy, you know, we were able to move Dietrich around to a couple of spots where he was able to play some nickel, some dime, and obviously the safety position. But he was a player that you know, we knew would have a role, but his role evolved as camp went, and he really showed his worth by being able to not only line up in multiple spots but have success and production at all those different areas.
That's wild, man. That, just hearing you talk about that, it's pretty cool. And it's awesome to see that translate on film. Like, how good does it feel when you vouch for a guy? Like, I'm sure you can't give a name, but I'm sure there's been an instance where you're like, this guy is, I'm telling you, like, he's going to play the role that we need him to play. And then maybe there was some pushback from the higher ups or maybe some other coaches or scouts. Has that ever happened? And then you've been proven right?
Oh, no question. You know, there was a player with the Titans that stood on the table for and really pounded the table and forced us to kind of take him at that time. It was a fourth-round pick out of North Carolina State. It was Stephen Tulloch, an inside linebacker. And, you know, Tully was one of those players that didn't fit the height, weight, speed profile. He's a, you know, 5'10", 250-pound, ran a 4.940. But if you look at his tape, he was ultra-productive. This is a guy that played on the North Carolina State team with Mario Williams and Manny Lawson, who went in the first round as well, another defensive tackle who went in the first round, and a corner, Marcus Hudson, who won the second round. They had a very high-profile defense, and if you ask every coordinator coach on that team who stirred the drink on the defense, and it was Stephen Tulloch. And so when it came to the fourth round and he was there on draft day, he was one of those players that I'd spent a ton of time with personally, and he was a guy that I had communicated with over text over and over and over again. Was he getting phone calls? This is the day when the fourth round started a brand new day. Okay. You had the first three rounds on one day, and then the fourth or seventh on another day. So Steven texted me, and he really wanted to play for the Titans at that time. We had a spot at the inside linebacker position, and he was one of those. And he started to text me and said, hey, I'm starting to get a lot of phone calls. And, you know, at that point, I told our general manager, I said, you know, we're going to have to take him now. And he had a, they had a couple of scouts had another inside linebacker that they wanted, and you know, I did everything I could with all the information that I'd acquired to really, in that 5-minute time frame, talk our general manager into taking Tully, and he ended up playing a 10-year career with the Titans and the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I bet that's one of those things that, like, that's why you do the job, because it just kind of feels like you called it, like, I told you so, like.
You know what it is, and you know, it's funny, because every time I see Tully since then, you know, he always reminds me of that, because, you know, I fought for him and really wanted him, and he knew that, and so I was really invested in his career, and he was such a terrific person as well. He's done so many things off the field in his community, really in Detroit, and then in Miami, where he's from. He's done so many wonderful things off the field. He's just turned into a terrific guy, to a person.
And that's always what makes it worth it, man. So, Carlo, what was another one you had?
Out of your scouting career, who are your – and I feel you're a humble guy, but who are your top three guys that you're just like, yep, you know, I'm the reason you had a great career? Who are the top three guys?
If it wasn't for me, you'd probably be not doing this.
You'd be playing for the AFL.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't say anybody that I said had a career because of me, but right. There are players. You know, Quentin Spain, who was a left guard for the Titans, was a player that went undrafted and spent a lot of time on the phone with Quentin, or spent a lot of time before the draft, knowing that he was probably going to go undrafted. Actually, had him visit with the Titans on one of the 30 visits that you had, and talked to him about not getting drafted, even though he wanted to, you know, kind of sold the opportunity with the Titans that, you know, he was going to have an opportunity to come in and play pretty early. He was an athletic guy that had great size as well as the athleticism, but just for some reason he didn't get invited to the combine and didn't get that opportunity, you know, as a draft choice, but sold his agent, sold him on coming to the Titans. He came right in and ended up starting at left guard as an undrafted rookie, and ended up playing and starting 4 years with the Titans and left in free agency to the Buffalo Bills, and just signed a big 3-year deal with the Buffalo Bills and re-upped with them. So he's made a lot of money. And he came to a good spot with the Titans that knew a little bit of his limitations at the time, but still he got that opportunity to start, and he's the one that kind of took off and made it happen. You know, I say another player, Avery Williamson, was an inside linebacker from Kentucky. He was a Tennessee native from Jackson, Tennessee, and you know, one of those kids that just made a ton of plays at Kentucky, but didn't run extremely well, and he was one again kind of like. Kind of like Tully, I spent a lot of time texting during the draft and checking to see if he was going to be available at that time. And you know, when the time was right, we struck. And you know, he ended up having a really nice 4 or 5 year career with the Titans, and then went on to the Jets with a big payday. Unfortunately, he had an ACL tear last year, but I'm sure he'll rebound this year. But you know, those are two that stick out in my mind really a lot, that you know, could have been either undrafted or were undrafted players. You know, there was so many of those guys that you, you know, evaluate, whether it's Corlin Finnegan at Samford University, yep. He played safety, and he goes on to have a really nice career, or even a Kevin Byard who played at Middle Tennessee State that, you know, wasn't invited to the combine and, you know, went down, took the coaching staff and the GM down to Middle Tennessee and made sure they were able to get their eyes on him. To really show some interest, and you know, we were happy to get Kevin when we got that opportunity, and he ended up turning into a Pro Bowl caliber player.
Yeah, he did, and that's weird you say that, because Belichick was at MTSU, I'm sure, as you saw or heard this past, you know. So it's cool when coaches go to schools like that, because I was actually living in Murfreesboro at the time. We live in Laverne now, but I mean, it's cool when you see these coaches go to the smaller schools and you know, really just kind of rummaging through the woods, seeing what they can find, because there are a lot of players and a lot of talent that don't get that, and it could be something as small as a high school coach not putting out their film, or something
Chris Johnson
like that.
At East Carolina,
exactly, or you got, well, Jerry Rice back in the day, Mississippi Valley. So I mean, you've got these guys with incredible talent who, you know, just kind of fly under the radar, and I was, that kind of feeds into this next question: who in this draft do you feel like is kind of flying under the radar right now, kind of somebody to watch? And how do you feel like this virtual draft's gonna, you know, how do you think that's gonna mix some shit up? Because it's obviously a different ballgame now. I mean, it's never been done before. So how's that gonna affect things?
You know, I think the virtual draft is going to be something that is really going to be a different for a lot of GMs that are used to doing it one way. It's going to be a little bit different. It's going to be one of those that I think that trades are not going to be as prevalent. I think you're going to see less trades. It's going to be a little bit more difficult to navigate through unless you can have a deal set up ahead of time. If this player's available, you know, we'll go ahead and make this trade. But a lot of the trades that I've been a part of in a draft room, you're making those trades on draft day when somebody happens to fall that another team falls in love with. And, you know, you're making that trade right then. And I think that's going to be very difficult for a lot of teams. So, you know, the definitely player for pick trade will not happen. And what I mean is a veteran player for draft choice, just because you're not going to be able to get the injury information, the medical information that soon. There's too many phone calls to make to the trainer, to the GM, to the coach, that type of thing. You know, in a normal setting, you're all in the same room. So I think that's going to be tough. You know, you ask about a player that I think has fallen in the draft that that I like a little bit more than what I've seen in a lot of mocks and a lot of television shows that I've watched is Cole Cabral. He's a center from Arizona State.
Okay.
He played some left tackle. You know, he's a guy that I think will come in and have a starting role in the NFL, whether it's his first year or second year. But, you know, Cole Cabral is a player that I've seen in a lot of situations where he's either a late-round draft choice or undrafted. And this is a guy with too much experience, too much success at two important positions like a left tackle and center. He was having to play center out of need.
Hardest position in football.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said hardest position in football when he said left tackle.
You know, it really is. And if you have that kind of versatility that you can play a left tackle position and then flip over to center, especially in one game, you know, there's something to be said for that. I scouted a player that we ended up drafting that I went to a game live. It's North Carolina State again versus Clemson on a Thursday night in North Carolina, at North Carolina State. And we had a player named Leroy Harris, and we ended up drafting. And I watched Leroy in that game play left guard, center, and left tackle all in the same game. Because of injury, he was forced to move over to all those spots. But I already liked him as a prospect. But after seeing him play all those positions in one game, you know, I was completely sold and sold that information to our offensive line coach, Mike Munchak, and then to our GM, Floyd Reese at the time.
Hell yeah. So when you get a player like that who not only has the physical capability to play all three of those, but the mental, because I feel like a lot of people, I mean, obviously scouts, that's your job, but a lot of regular fans and you know, guys who are just like listening or talking about football, they don't really think about the mental aspect of how that plays into it. Because, you know, you might have a player who's physically versatile, but if their brain's mushy, it really isn't, it's not going to work. And have you seen instances of that where you're like, man, this guy's built for everything, but he just can't, he can't get it together?
You know, there are those type players, and a lot of it's whether it's the mental aspect that they really box them down, and that goes back to, you know, being able to work with the personnel and the coaching staffs hand in hand, and the teams that really have a lot of success, the scouting departments and coaching staffs really can work together. And what I mean by that is you know, as a scout, you're finding out about these players and their learning ability and how they learn and how they're taught. And if you walk into a NFL room and the coach really ignores that, then that player really doesn't have a chance. If he's if he learns better on the board than he does, you know, by looking at a playbook, then you've got to be able to go that extra mile and teach him on the board. Some coaches don't want to do that. They teach one way, and that guy's going to get lost. And the really good coaches are able to determine how their players learn, but a lot of that should be listened to by the personnel department who has investigated that player and found out by the college coaches how they learn best.
Man, yeah, that's insane just hearing you talk about all this, man, to be honest with you. Blake, man, we really appreciate you coming on. Carlisle, did you have any questions?
Man, not really. No, I just really appreciate you coming on, and we look forward to having you again.
And honestly, Blake, I did have one more question. This is another selfish one. You need a quarterback to start your franchise with, and you've got, you know, the top five guys right now, I guess, would be considered Burrow, Herbert, Tua, And then you got, I mean, in my opinion, I guess Love and Fromm, top five. But if you need a quarterback right now, who are you taking besides Joe? I mean, he's going to go to Cincy. We know that's the guy you want. But who out of these other guys has the best potential to give you a franchise quarterback?
You know, if the medical checks out well, then I take Tua Tagovailoa, no question about it. I think he would rival Joe as the number one pick in the draft if he was completely healthy. Now, whether he'll be or not, I think the injuries are a major concern. And if I was a general manager or a coach, I'd be really concerned with not only the volume of injuries he had, but the severity of those injuries. So, you know, I think that's would be tough. Of the other guys, I think it's a crapshoot. You know, Justin Herbert's got some flies on him. He's got a lot of he's got the size and the physical traits there, but the instincts and the you know, accuracy is not always there. I think Jordan Love is a player that looks good in shorts and throws really well at times. And he can throw on the move. He can pinpoint a deep ball, but he has trouble hitting the running back in the flats on a number of great occasions. And, you know, those are things accuracy does not get better.
No.
You know, if you lack accuracy, it's going to continue to show up, and there's a reason for it. And, you know, I think Jordan Love's got a lot of physical traits. He's the biggest boom or bust quarterback in the draft. I think one of the safest guys is Jake Fromm. You know, you're looking at another Andy Dalton-type quarterback, a player that will probably go in the second round but could start on a team tomorrow. He's a competitor. If you look at Jake Fromm from the time he was in middle school, this is a winner. This is a winner at every level of football, every level of baseball. You know, obviously he was a really good baseball player, too, that he's ever been in. And those guys continue to have success on the next level. They find a way. Whether his hands are small, he's short, his arms not strong, don't care. You know, those guys win ball games. And, you know, a lot of guys said that about Drew Brees coming out. A lot of those, you know, said that about Andy Dalton. Those
haters. Yeah, I can't stand it when people criticize. I'm just kidding. We do it all the time. But we agree with you, man. I think Tua is probably your best bet. And, I mean, if you're like me, all I need is a 6-second video to be convinced otherwise. Once he was flipping those hips so quick last week,
100%.
I was like, he's back. There's no issues. He's fine.
If you look at his frame, he looks like a guy that could withstand punishment. He just hasn't been able to. He's had some really freaky injuries that he's had. And, you know, it's a lot like Jake Locker when we took Jake. Yep. Jake looked like somebody that would never break, and all he did was, you know, get hurt. So, you know, there's guys like Chris Johnson who look like he would break every time he carried the ball, but he never got hurt. So it's just, you know, there's certain things that just go beyond the eyeball test sometimes. And, you know, if you have a Tua who has a history of injuries, he's probably going to get hurt again. But, you know, you get a guy like Justin Herbert who's had very few, and, you know, he may go out and get hurt the first 2 years. So who knows?
Right. No, yeah, that's very valid. It's all just kind of, I guess, whatever happens, happens. You can't control. Once you're on the field, it's a shit show. I mean, literally anything. It could be your offensive lineman coming back into you. It could be anything. And you know that, I guess, as well as anybody. That's just, it's crazy how you take all this time to, you know, scout the player, get the player, build the rapport, get the relationship. And then, you know, he's on the team and he's a part of the team. He's a part of the pretty much the machine that makes the whole thing go. So it's just cool hearing somebody who has that much of a hand playing it come in and talk to us. And Blake, I really can't stress enough how much it means that you came on and talked to us, man.
Hey, I enjoyed it. Call me in time.
Well, hey, thank you. And stay safe out there with all this crazy stuff going on. And, man, if you don't mind, we definitely will want to talk to you after this draft because we think some interesting stuff might happen.
Sounds good. I'll be ready for you.
All right, brother. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Blake.
And everybody, that was Blake, Mr. Blake. That was a rough start there, brother. Austin,
I didn't know what you said. I didn't know what the fuck you were saying.
I was like, just introduce.
I thought you said it. I was like, you already introduced. You okay. Already introduced it.
Yeah, but I didn't introduce you.
Oh well, I did.
I was like, hey, yeah.
Well, he fucking knows who
he
I know, am.
He knows who you are now.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, we all know who you are, and we love you, and we love each other. Fuck out of here. All right. I'm just kidding, guys. You know, we're just joshing around. Can't wait till we actually have a real studio.
I was going to see what he was going to say about the XFL going bankrupt and pretty much his team being the reason that they owe the University of Houston $285,000 for your stadium.
But, you know, that one didn't get answered, and I can't talk. But we love you. We appreciate you tuning in. We'll see you next week. We don't know who we're going to have.
On the Dome.
The Dome.
Yeah. Boy, was it neat? Yeah.